Hey, what's going on, anglers? Welcome to the Go Fish Podcast, where the lines are always tight and the fish are always on. Let's just walk you through who we are and introduce ourselves. I'm your host, Brandon Austin, founder of Go Fish Cam.
And I'm his co-host, Hunter Strimple. On this podcast, we're going to be talking about everything fishing. You'll hear epic fish tales from our guest each episode, some tips and tricks, fishing news, and anything your tackle box desires.
If you want to be a guest on the podcast or have a topic you'd like us to discuss, email us at podcast@gofishcam.com or give us a shout at 1-833-8-GO-FISH. Make sure to tune in each month because we are planning some amazing things coming your way. Today we're being joined by one of our very own, Brandon Robbins, at the Go Fish Cam team here, as well as Edward Anderson, founder of Tackle 22. Guys, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this will be a pretty exciting one to talk about. In celebration of Veterans Day, we have two vets in the room. Edward, I don't know if you know this, but Brandon was also in serving and is a veteran as well.
That's awesome. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, you too, Edward. My background's 10 years of Navy. How about yourself?
I spent 8 years active duty in the Marine Corps, deployments to Iraq. I was a aircraft rescue and firefighting specialist, a rescue pilot. And then after my active duty service in the Marine Corps, I spent 3 years serving with the federal government as a civilian in Afghanistan.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great stuff, man. We really appreciate your time.
So you're over there in Columbus, Georgia. Is that where you're from?
I've actually only lived here for a year. I lived on the East Coast. I lived in coastal Georgia for about the last 6 years. I'm a firefighter paramedic, and I was looking to transition to work with the Department of Defense, and that brought me out to the west side of the state and working here on Fort Benning Army Base.
So military and now working as a firefighter, you know, how does that translate to fishing? Tell us your fishing journey and, you know, how you got into it.
All right. So, when I come home from Iraq, and I got home in 2006 and going into 2007, just really started to have some self-destructive type behaviors before being actually diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. And really not understanding what was going on within myself. And I had another Marine who took notice and just made a very small gesture of offering to take me fishing one weekend. And it completely changed my life. You know, I had a positive way to channel my energy. I had a new hobby to keep me busy. And it got me outside of my own four walls. And that seems to be a common denominator with veterans with post-traumatic stress, in my experience since I've been working with them, is just getting them outside of their own environment. You know, when you're trapped inside your own four walls and you can't get outside your own mind, you know, that's when you really begin to struggle. And so from him taking me fishing on, you know, fishing's just been my passion. It's been my life. And what kind of led to the me founding Tackle 22 Fishing is in 2016, the Marine that saved my life took his own. And I was unable to be there for him. I was unable to repay the favor, the small gesture that he paid to me. So I now pay that forward to any veteran and any active duty service member that I can reach or that can get to me or that I can find a seat on a boat for.
That's really powerful, man. That's an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. And the national average for veteran suicide has been reported as 22 a day, and that's vastly underreported. So there are new studies out, new statistics out now that are showing 20 a day. I've read one that says 21 a day, and even though our name, our organization is Tackle 22 Fishing, I don't want to get caught up in the numbers. So we are going to continue to do what we do until that number is zero, and then we're going to go fishing for fun anyway.
So after getting into it, you know, to go from that to kind of starting to guide a little bit, you must have picked up the sport pretty quickly.
I did, and I think it's probably the competitive nature that was instilled in me by the Marine Corps. You know, if I do something, I want to be good at it. So I went full head of steam right into it. You know, between researching and reading tactics, watching videos, acquiring gear. You know, people don't understand that there's a science to it, you know, and you really have to do your homework if you want to be successful at it.
Yeah, we call Hunter here our in-house angler, just because, and as hard as it is to admit it myself, he's probably the best person at fishing here in the office. So definitely a science to it. I just like getting out, though. You know, getting out on the water is definitely peaceful. Go out with a couple beers, a couple friends, you know, even just strangers, and you end up with a bunch of friends that were on the boat with you. I feel like every time I've gone on a charter, I've always, you know, kept in touch with anyone I was fishing with.
For sure.
Absolutely. And I feel the same way, whether we're catching fish or not. If I'm sitting out on a boat or on a pier or on a dock somewhere, you know, there's no greater church in the world, you know. it's peaceful. It's relaxing, and though I do take others out fishing quite often, I really enjoy getting out by myself.
What do you normally fish for?
Right now, I'm mainly catfishing. I started out saltwater when Tom, the Marine that took me out, got me fishing. We mainly shark fished, and then I got really heavy into bass fishing. And then when I actually started taking people out, it's kind of hard to take someone out who doesn't really know a lot about bass fishing or equipped for bass fishing and take them out and have a successful trip. So I really kind of fell into catfishing and striper fishing because it's a lot easier to guide and it's a lot easier to put them on fish. And that's when I started to grab the attention of sponsors and stuff like that. So it's really just kind of stuck with it. I do find that the catfishing industry was a lot more welcoming and receptive to my program and what I've done, and we've been very, very fortunate and very blessed to have outstanding companies like Go Fish Cam jump on board and support us to the max.
It's a pleasure, you know, for us to work with you and help you out with what you're doing. I mean, your cause is absolutely amazing and very, very admirable. But I definitely hear what you're saying in regards to, you know, bass fishing and as opposed to anything else, because, you know, I grew up on the coast. And so I grew up doing a lot of saltwater fishing. I mean, I was 10 minutes walking distance from any body of saltwater, no matter which direction I walked whenever I left my house. And then when I got up here to Austin and started bass fishing, the best thing that I like to, or how I like to describe it more than anything else, is I compare it to mathematics. And I say, look, you know, bottom fishing or saltwater fishing, that's pretty much basic addition and subtraction. And when you get into bass fishing, now we're talking about calculus and trigonometry, you know, because there's so many different factors, techniques, color, water temp, time of the year, you know, what the depth of that lake is at that particular point in time. I mean, there are so many variables, and, you know, being a guide, doing bass fishing trips in particular, I mean, you really have to be in an area for 15, 20 years and know every possible technique of every possible area in order to put people on fish. So I entirely hear what you're saying in regards to, fishing for bass with guides.
Absolutely. There's a stress to that. You go out and, you know, you're playing water temperature, depth, structure, technique, clarity, you know, so there's you going out and trying to find a pattern to put them on fish. And, you know, if they're maybe not familiar with flipping or drop shotting or Carolina rigging, you know, there's going to be a stress there. And we want to try to eliminate the stress from the trip, because they're coming out with us to find peace.
Yeah. Yeah, normally if I was to, you know, when I take, you know, my buddies bass fishing or people that haven't, you know, done a whole lot of bass fishing with me, typically what I put on the line for them, like, here's a crankbait, you'll be fine. there's really very little technique involved with a crankbait. I'll throw it in that direction and pull it back as fast as you can. If we get a bite, great. If not, we'll move.
You know? You can't go wrong with a great square bill.
No, not at all.
the cheat code for bass fishing around here.
Yeah. it's you know, a crankbait will catch fish even if fish aren't biting, because they, you know, they trigger that reaction bite. And so that's like one of the most popular lures used around, you know, cold water conditions during the winter and things like that. It's because, you know, bass move off to that deeper water. And so you get like a 9, 10XD crankbait, you know, drop it down in the really, really deep water and just start pulling it back. Even if the fish aren't hungry, they just can't help themselves. You know, they'll come up and just hit it. So, you know, I get a lot of foul hook in the winter off a crankbait.
What, aside from square bills and other crankbaits, what's your guys' tip for anyone who's, you know, trying to get into bass fishing to, you know, learn this trigonometry, as Hunter likes to put it? You know, what's the trick here?
First and foremost, don't get discouraged. You know, when I first started bass fishing, I bought a bass boat right off the bat. And I went out probably my first 5 trips, and I've never been more discouraged in fishing in my life. You know, so it's just do your research, get on YouTube, find out who's fishing in your area, what they're using. A lot of people in the bass industry don't want to share their secrets.
That's true.
Bass fishermen are definitely pretty secretive.
Yeah.
But just there's plenty of YouTube videos out there. You can find someone in your location that's on fish, and generally you'll find somebody who's willing to help an up and coming fisherman.
So Brandon, what kind of fishing do you like to do? I mean, you and Hunter, you know, have been best friends since childhood.
Forever, yeah.
So you have to have gotten into the sport with him, but
No, absolutely. Yeah, so I similarly grew up near the coast, you know, Gulf Coast, salt water. So I'm not near the angler that Hunter is, but my experience growing up comes from just mostly like live bait, whether it's catfish or maybe some flounder on the bottom or something like that. I really didn't get into freshwater anything until I got out of the military and came back to Austin. And I've done a lot of fishing with Hunter since then. And from him and his dad, I learned a lot about, you know, bass fishing. And I could understand the allure of it from someone who doesn't consider themselves an angler, a full-time angler. You know, so kind of this outside looking in perspective. I do it more as a hobby, less as a profession. But I absolutely enjoy the challenge of said trigonometry, right? The challenge that freshwater, you know, bass fishing presents. I really enjoy it, and I've got a few years under my belt, as it were, but I'm overdue for another trip. We'll say that for sure. Now, I will say, to kind of elaborate, I did get some interesting fishing trips in my time in the Navy. Not near as much as I would have liked. But out in Florida, you know, once again, out in the Atlantic, had some stuff going on. I think they had Spanish mackerel out there at the time. But the most interesting, I'd say, is when I went to Cuba in Guantanamo Bay. I was stationed there for a year. And just getting to see that Caribbean style of sea life. And, you know, we went fishing. I caught some queen trigger. Lionfish, one of my buddies caught a shark, so that was interesting. But yeah, seeing the different species out there, and it's just really incredible. So fishing, like you were saying, Edward, is for me too, I think, just a super peaceful. It's always a great time. I never leave fishing not relaxed afterwards. You know, it's a great time.
It's my zen.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm like you, man. I'm one of those people that, you know, I really enjoy fishing by myself. You know, I like being out there and just not having a sound or anything like that. And regardless of whether or not I'm catching fish, I'm out there in the middle of nowhere, and it's just me, my rod, the water. I mean, if I happen to catch a fish, great. It's just icing on the cake. But, you know, I just enjoy being out there. It's my reset, you know, for whatever stresses are occurring. And, you know, I don't even need, you know, stress as an excuse to it, so to speak. I mean, I just, you know, give me any excuse I can, you know, to go out and sit on the lake by myself. I'm all about it. And so,
It makes it easier too if I'm by myself, if I'm filming for my YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who knows how many takes I'm going to do when I'm talking to the camera.
Welcome to my world, man. So, you know, we sell fishing cameras here, and so a lot of the YouTube production and the videos that we do, it's most of the time me doing it. And so, you know, I'm out, you know, fishing, and, you know, it's a different type of fishing for me now since I'm working at GoFish Cam. And so, you know, I can't tell you the last time that I actually went out and fished without having at least 2 to 3 cameras of different calibers on me at any given time, you know? And so, but it's okay. But I hear what you're saying. You got to do 3 different takes. It's like, damn it, I went ahead and said this wrong. Let me go ahead and replay that.
You know? I need to start saving my outtakes, you know, when I start talking to the camera and I get, you know, start stumbling over my words, and then the cussing starts.
I'm the exact same way. I've got a little file on my desk of everything where I screwed up, and, you know, my little internal joke to myself for a while there was that I'd be walking around, and all of a sudden I would clear my throat or have to cough or something like that, and I would always go, damn COVID. And like I'd have to redo it and then come back, but yeah, I've got quite a few of those, you know. That's actually pretty funny. But, you know, it's, you really don't know until you get to the very, very end of the trip, and then you come home and you're taking a look at everything. But, you know, that's the beautiful thing about editing, you know. I mean, you can polish whatever you need to.
I was gonna say, thankfully you have a good editor.
Yeah, I do. I have a very, very good editor, you know, and so yeah, he can make some miracles happen with what I present, because that's pretty much the dynamic up here, is that, you know, I'll come back from a fishing trip with 9 hours worth of footage in hopes that we've got 4 minutes worth of good stuff.
You know? I'm still very new to editing, you know, and YouTube in general. I feel like I'm learning the software more every day. But I've always joked that if I started actually saving those moments where I start getting beside myself and swearing like crazy, that I wanted to see if I can string out a 5-minute compilation on YouTube of nothing but bleeps and outtakes.
Yeah. And what's funny is that, like, videos like that, and even fishing videos like that, the ones that I consider to be organic, meaning it's not nothing pre-planned you had in your head, you know, it's not something that you wanted the storyboard, so to speak, to go about. Those are almost always the best videos, because that's really who you are, and that's really what's out fishing. And in the way of just comedic relief, that's the best styles of videos.
Yeah, I was gonna say, sometimes when I'm editing Hunter's videos, I've gone through and just added in bleeps anyways, just for that comedic relief.
If someone wants organic, I just take the GoPro and walk through my house, do a Tackle 22 Fishing Cribs edition, and show them how I'm fishing gears. Exploded all over my house.
Oh yeah,
that was something that was amazing to me. I think earlier this year we were just looking at different statistics about anglers, and the average angler, I think it has over 20, I think it's even closer to 30, has over 20 rods, which is insane when you think about it, just given the fact that you find your favorite for maybe, you know, salt water, fresh water, a little bit of a, you know, a bait caster. But how many rods can you really bring out with you, you know?
Look, you sound like my wife. every one of them has a purpose, but I've got to ask you, sir, how many, just because we're on this conversation, because a lot of people look at me like I'm insane, and I want to see exactly how I compare to, you know, someone that does this, you know, all the time as a guide. How many rods, I mean, if I'm not incriminating you here, how many rods do you have, operational or non-operational? How many rods do you have?
Gosh, at least 20.
At least 20.
Yeah. We have our striper season here is about 2 to 3 months when they're spawning. So I got striper gear. I have bass gear. I have all of my catfish gear from my sponsors. And then I have catfish gear from before I was sponsored that I don't really use much anymore. So I would say I easily have 20 to 25 operational setups, combos ready to go. My spare refrigerator in my garage.
Nice.
I think that kind of be an interesting, like, nonprofit for someone to do in the angling industry, is just reach out to anglers and collect all their old gear that they don't use that's perfectly functional, but just pooling up in their garage or in their shed.
That's a good
and
idea.
Donate it to kids, donate it to vets, donate it to people who are, you know, just getting into the sport.
Yeah. I mean, that would probably be a really, really good idea. But I think if it actually came down to it, you know, real hardcore anglers have, whether or not you use it or not, you can have a reel sitting on yourself that's full of dust. But in the back of your mind, you're going to go, but I might use it.
That's how you need a good salesperson. That's going to have to be a nonprofit hell of a salesperson. You know, talk you out of your reel that you've never used. But I mean, don't get me wrong.
Hell of a salesperson.
I have about I think 11 or 12 rods in my shed at my house, and I've maybe like used three. Yeah. Like I never use the other ones. Yeah. They are just. Sitting there, yeah. They've never been used.
If I was to sit there and count up all the rods and reels that I have that are sporadically spread out in different locations and different people's areas that I use and that I own and stuff like that, I would say as far as rod and reel combos, I'm probably in the triple digits. But I know for a fact that in my shed at my house right now, I've got 4 5-gallon buckets full of nothing but reels, you know, that I've just, I've acquired over the years, you know, because you always say the same thing, throwing in the bucket's good for parts.
<You know? laughs> Sounds like go shopping in his garage.
I got quite a few,
small flea market, you know? Man.
Well, I mean, well, that's just from living in different locations that require different tools, you know. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's you got different things that are for different purposes, you know. It's like you always get the question when you bring home a new rod, why do you need a new rod? Because I'm going fishing for this. Why can't you use this rod? Because it's not for that. Yeah,
you know, I think Edward and I could you know, understand, you know, from this point of view. I mean, we could chalk that up to just preparedness. I mean, you got to be ready to go at all times.
Absolutely. I mean, I still find myself going out for a catfishing trip with 12 rods, you know, because I'll put out six on my racks. I'll carry a seventh or sometimes even an eighth if I'm dragging or pulling planer boards. I'm going to have a bait rod, at least one bait rod catching bluegill or skipjack. I'm going to have a second for catching crappie because we can actually use crappie for bait here in Georgia. So, I mean, I even carry a 7-foot, 11-inch heavy stick for stripers while I'm out just in case.
Yeah.
What's the biggest catfish you've gotten so far?
Just over 50 pounds. And I did that on Lake Joe Wheeler in Alabama. And it's really kind of a mid-sized fish for there. The Chattahoochee Valley where I fish is just really not known for those big 90 to 100 pound blue cats like they get in western Alabama. But I am starting to get out that way more often. I just got back last weekend and I was supposed to go out this weekend back out to Lake Wheeler. But I got blessed with some mandatory overtime. So, you know, paramedic life takes over sometimes.
For sure.
But hoping to get something in the triple digits here before the year's out.
You ever get a hold of any big Opelousas out where you're at?
I have not. I haven't.
Or yellow cats. The Chattahoochee River, depends on where you're at.
And Lake West Point, where I usually fish, we generally target flatheads.
Well, that'd be your Opelousa. It'd be your flathead. Yeah. It depends on where you're at. You know, I mean, some people call them Opelousa. Some people call them yellow cat. Some people call them flathead. You know, it's just, you know, it's all the same cat. But yeah, it's. I was going to get your opinion on that. That's why I was asking you about Opelousas, because, you know, we have the occasional Opelousa on the lake that we're up here. But, you know, I mean, I've seen people out fishing for them and they tell me they're fishing for Opelousa, but they're using cut bait, you know, and stuff like that. And I always tell them, man, you're not going to catch a decent Opelousa on a piece of cut bait. I mean, to my knowledge, every time I've ever caught one or seen people catch them, they like live bait, you know.
They absolutely like live bait. And I guess it really depends on your fishery. In Lake West Point, I've caught Opelousas or flatheads on cut crappie. But usually if I want to target them specifically, I'm going to throw nothing but live bluegill.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I use. Yeah, live perch, you know, works some of the best. I have caught them on an earthworm, but it's moving. That's the thing.
Absolutely. They are so hard. Like, you're not going to use electronics to target flatheads, except for finding structure. They are almost impossible to mark. So I'm going to be throwing live bluegill at very heavy structure, very heavy timber. This time of year, probably 25 to 30 feet of water, depending on water temperature. And we've been pretty successful.
Is it all catch and release for you, or with the catfish, you know, are do you have some good recipes that you'll take some home and cook up?
Actually, just my last YouTube video, I did a clean and cook. So I, all the way from cleaning the fish to how I prepare it to how I cook it. And then you get a little glimpse of me enjoying the fruits of my labor. But anything over 10 pounds goes back in the water. We are a big advocate of catch, photo, and release for anything, any bigger size catfish, especially for this area that's not known for really big trophy size catfish. We want to get those fish back in the water, let them spawn, let them swim away healthy, breed, and get bigger so someone else can enjoy it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm a big catch and release fisherman for, you know, a couple of reasons. One, I just don't really feel like cleaning fish. You know, two, the fun stops when the fish dies. You know, that was something my dad used to always say. You know, I mean, let him go. I mean, you can go fight him again one day. I mean, if you want fish, there's places to go to catch fish if you want to eat fish. But I mean, me personally, I'm not the biggest fan of freshwater catfish, because again, I'm spoiled. I grew up on the coast my entire life, where all my fish were pre-salted, and so when you start, trying to eat, you know, freshwater fish, there's not really much of a comparison. And you know, the only really, I guess, plentiful eating catfish that we'll catch around here is channel cats, and channel cats, just they're not really that good to me. Yeah. You know, I'd rather eat a blue more than a channel cat, but I mean, if I had a choice, I'm just gonna throw him back in the water.
And now I feel challenged to come out there and cook you some catfish, because I'm pretty sure I could put some on a plate that you would absolutely love.
Hey, we encourage that kind of stuff around here. Don't get us started on all that.
It would be really nice to have somebody actually cook me fish for a
time. I know.
I'm the resident fish cooker up here.
That is a personal attack. Like, I feel challenged. I'm coming out there and I'm bringing some catfish.
Hey, there we go.
Please do, and I will take you fishing, sir. That'll be a nice change of pace for you. I'll take you fishing for once, and maybe you don't have to take other people fishing.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Don't threaten me with a good time.
Yeah. I know, right?
I have to admit, I was fishing when I asked you the question about catching cooks, because Hunter's looking out for a catfish and a good recipe to, you know, change our minds here at the office. So maybe you have some insight there for him.
Yeah. And unfortunately, like I said, it was my last video that I put out, and it's almost 27 minutes long. I felt so bad that the video was so long, but I really didn't want to split it into two parts, because it really just all kind of runs together. And if I split it into two, I'd really lose the viewer. But there's a lot of people that watched it who really just didn't know how to clean catfish or how to prepare it to eliminate some of that really muddy or fishy flavor and stuff like that. I mean, it's almost, I relate it to preparing deer meat, you know, soaking it, stuff like that, making sure that you're getting a lot of that excess flavor out of there. Make sure you're cleaning it and preparing it properly, and then I like mine super spicy.
Yeah, well, that was actually something that, you know, I've had a lot of people that, you know, I know in my world that, you know, eat nothing but freshwater fish, and they always say, well, you know, you can make it taste good, but, you know, you got to season it twice as much as you would saltwater fish. And that's what everybody tells me. And I'm like, well, thank you for making my point.
Right. Oh, I love some saltwater fish, man. I love some blackened mahi and shark. That's probably my favorite fish to eat.
I actually 100% agree with you. Mahi is my favorite. You know, it's just, you, going after them, you really got to look for certain things going offshore, because I try to go offshore about once every 3 weeks. I mean, I've got a buddy down on the coast that we'll run offshore in about a 28-foot Bertram, and we'll run 50, 60 miles off in the Gulf. And, you know, I mean, if we run across a big pile of sargassa weed or seaweed floating on top, I mean, you best believe we're going to troll around it. But that's really the only times that we can hook up with any Dorado. But our big thing is just snapper, you know, I mean, so we'll be releasing a video here pretty soon, my own catch and cook, where I did red snapper on the half shell. And so that's going to be one that's coming out pretty soon.
I don't think I've actually gone out and caught snapper.
It's the easiest thing in the world to fish for. It's just, you drop it down there and you pick them up. It's almost work. Like, it really is.
Yeah, depending how deep you go, you're going to end up needing those electric reels.
Yeah.
Edward, so I know Brandon mentioned that, you know, he had some cool trips and when he was, you know, in active duty and touring. I know you didn't really get into the sport until after, but, you know, did you ever get a chance to check out some of those saltwater fish and some of those areas that you travel to?
Absolutely. You know, Marine Corps is always going to be near a body of water. There are very few Marine Corps bases that are not going to be on the coast. So I picked it up in 2007, and I didn't separate from the military until 2010. So I did a lot of bank fishing, pier fishing in the Beaufort, South Carolina area in the Lowcountry, mainly for sharks. And then when I separated from the military and began to work overseas, I actually took a couple of charters out of Dubai.
Oh, nice.
Dubai is where we flew to and from Afghanistan out of, and I had the opportunity to go fishing out on the man-made Palm Islands out there and the Globe Islands. It was kind of the wrong time of year each time, so we didn't really catch much, but we were able to get on some really big barracuda. And that was just so much fun to catch.
Yeah, kudas are fun. Yeah, you normally get a jump or two out of them. I've got some really, really good barracuda footage that we've pulled on the GoFish cam, and they're just like underwater wolves, man. They will hit anything. What's the biggest kuda you caught when you're out there?
I couldn't tell you, brother. It's been so long now, and there were several people on the charter between me and the person that was with me and two other people. Plus the captain and his people. I don't think we weighed anything. I don't remember actually ever pulling a fish out of the water. We pretty much released everything with gills still water.
Yeah. You ever eaten kuda?
I've never.
Yeah, people are a lot split down the middle about that. You know, I pulled in a kuda a little while back, and it was this year, and you know, we decided that, you know, I'm gonna go ahead and try it. You know, there's a big, you know, thing with a barracuda, depending on where you catch it. If it's over a certain size, it's going to have a toxin in him. A lot of people assume it's mercury, but it's not. It's a toxin that's created from reef fish that live on corals and stuff like that they eat. And, you know, when they get above a certain size, you know, it can be pretty toxic for a human to eat. And normally what I tell people, and just got to reassure some people here, if you're ever in an area where you're, you know, catching barracuda, if there's amberjack in the area, if you're okay eating the amberjack in the area, you'll be fine eating the barracuda. Just keep the barracuda under about 40 pounds, but they're actually really good. You know, they're not fishy. They're a very, very clean tasting fish. You just want to eat them when they're relatively small.
That's good to know.
Yeah. So, but they're very, the reason I say that is that they're plentiful as all get out. Because normally when people go offshore, a lot of people look at them like trash fish, you know, because that's not what you're targeting. But, you know, if you're looking for some fish to eat and they're in the area and they're small, like 3 foot or under, I mean, if you want to mess a fish to eat, they're actually not bad.
I'll just keep that in mind. And see, I guess I'll have to come cook you some catfish and you're going to have to cook me some barracuda.
We can do that. So how do you like to cook your catfish? Do you do fried or baked or what? What do you do?
Oh, no. I fry it. I usually cut it up into nuggets and deep fry it. You know, I'm in South Georgia. Everything's deep fried.
Deep fried and spicy. That's how you have to eat the freshwater.
I'm from Southeast Texas. That's pretty much a food group is anything deep fried.
Yeah. If we don't have a gallon of peanut oil somewhere around the house, we're in deep trouble.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, I feel you.
You know, every time I come across someone who's an avid catfish angler, I'm always curious, have you ever tried noodling?
No, sir. I really enjoy having all 10 digits.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with you.
I got a lot of respect for people that go noodling.
I've always been so curious to go try it. It just seems like something that's like on a bucket list for anyone who fishes.
Knock yourself out,
bro. Yeah, have fun with that. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't see the sense in getting in murky water and let's stick my hand in a hole for a potential 40, 50, 60, 80-pound catfish to bite me, then I pull them out of said hole.
I want to play devil's advocate a little bit because, you know, this is a fishing podcast, and you know, to all the folks out there that do go noodling, my hat's off to you because I kind of agree with these guys that I wouldn't be too brave to go try it myself, but I admire the competition of it and the challenge of it. That can't be easy, and I think it takes a lot of skill from what I've seen people do it. But yeah, I don't think you'll catch me personally, but hey, if that's something for you, hey, hats off to you.
I've seen and caught very many 60 plus Had a buddy of mine catch a 100-plus-pound alligator snapping turtle.
Exactly.
And be sitting in those same holes. And look, a 100-pound alligator snapping turtle isn't going to take a finger. It is going to take your hand.
Yeah. Or possibly your arm. You know? Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, you know, because I, you know, we've got those turtles that were down where I lived, you know, and I've seen people walk into ditches and literally pick them up because they would harvest them to eat. And, you know, they would pick up these turtles and the turtle's head is bigger than a softball. And I mean, that will just bite a 2x4 in half. And again, like you said, they live in the same places as those catfish. So I can't justify it being a good idea to put my hand down in a hole where one of those things could be, you know. And even on my lake up here, I mean, we got things like water moccasins, beavers. Beavers are mean too, man. They're up in those holes. I don't want no part of it.
I was gonna say that earlier. Maybe it's the northerner in me, because if I go sticking my hand in any of those holes up in Canada, then I'm going to get chomped on by a beaver. So maybe, you know, catfish doesn't sound too bad, but yeah, now that you throw in the snapping turtles, reconsider.
Yes, you don't have those dinosaurs.
That risk factor goes up.
It's like we have literal underwater dinosaurs that are living here that will take your arm off.
That's it. I'm not ready to part with any hands just yet.
Yeah, I know. You know an alligator snapping turtle actually has a built-in lure? You ever seen that?
The tongue, right?
Yeah. So when they sit underwater, they open their mouth and their tongue looks like a worm that just barely moves. And these fish will come up to eat said worm and then it's all over. But yeah, the it's like a natural little fishing lure that they got inside their mouth. It's actually kind of interesting.
Sounds like we need to find an alligator snapping turtle so we can put a go fish around it.
Yeah, you go do that.
Go watch that.
Yeah, you go catch one, Brandon. Go ahead.
I'll be happy to watch you catch it.
Yeah.
It'll be a good video.
Well, you got to noodle it. That's the rule. If you're going to do it, you got to.
Oh, yeah.
Just lip him like you would a bass. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Everything will work out.
I have a lot of respect for the noodlers. I mean, if you've ever caught a big catfish, when they bite down, it doesn't feel great.
Oh, no. No. It's like road rash right up your arm, you know, right up your hand. It's terrible.
My hand is really just healing up. Because I carry gloves on the boat, but in the moment, I always forget to put it on when I go reaching in a catfish's mouth. And I had a 30-pound flathead I had, you know, gripped in the mouth. And I was trying to get my camera set up because I was actually filming for YouTube and I was live. And trying to get it to where people who were watching the live stream could see it. And he bit down the rolling and he tore my hand to pieces. So.
Oh, yeah. They pretty much have 60 grit sandpaper inside their mouth. You know?
I mean. Absolutely. And I promise you, when you're holding a 35-pound or 50-pound catfish with one hand, that catfish is going to go exactly where he wants to go.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just along for the ride.
Well, sounds like we got to come up to Georgia and go catfishing with you.
And I will say this, something I've noticed lately with a lot of sport fishermen catching big catfish, because it seems like the sport of catfishing is growing. The more I follow social media, a lot of people are hitting the Tennessee River, which is an amazing fishery for very, very large catfish. And since I was talking about handling them, I just wanted to say this. There's a lot of people who want to hold them like a largemouth bass. You know, where they just grab them by the mouth or by the lip and let them hang down. But with these larger 30-plus-pound catfish, if you're not cradling that fish, if you're grabbing them by the jaw and hanging them by 40 pounds, you're probably going to kill that fish. So please, guys, if you're sport fishing, you're catching big catfish, you're gonna have to get slimy. You're going to have to cradle them like a baby. Don't hang them by the jaw.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like somebody just picking you up by your jaw and just let you hang there. You're probably going to cause some damage to it. I mean, for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, Edward, I appreciate you for joining us, you know, and thank you for your time. It was an absolute pleasure. Tell the listeners, you know, how to find you, how to check out your stuff, how to check out Tackle 22.
All right. And I want to thank GoFishCam for being part of the Tackle 22 fishing family. We are very, very thankful to have any sponsors, and we really like to have a relationship with our sponsors. What can we do for you? Because you're already supporting us, so we want to make sure that we're supporting you to the max. And if you want to learn more about Tackle 22 Fishing, you can look us up at tackle22fishing.com. You'll find everything from every sponsor who supports us to our mission, a little about me, and what we do. There's contact information there. There is links to all of our social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on YouTube. And we are available pretty much 24/7. And any veteran that is listening or watching this podcast, when you contact or you contact us through the Facebook page, you're speaking to me directly. So regardless of wanting to go fishing or needing to go fishing, if you are in a situation and you need to speak to somebody, because our goal is to end veteran suicide. So if you are there and you are struggling, or even if you're not, you just need someone to speak to, please reach out and I will send you my phone number and you can contact me 24/7.
Edward, that's awesome. So guys, you know, go give him a follow, go check out his pages and his website. Edward, Brandon, you know, thank you guys for joining today, and thank you for your service. And to all the listeners who have also served, you know, thank you for your service as well. All right, Go Fish fam, thank you for tuning into the Go Fish podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at GoFishCam, and to sign up for our newsletter at www.gofishcam.com so that you can stay updated on future podcasts and everything Go Fish. And don't forget, if you want to be a guest on the podcast or have a topic you'd like to discuss, email us at podcast@gofishcam.com or give us a call, 1-833-8-GO-FISH. If you want to see any videos from Go Fish Cam or from Tackle 22, just go on YouTube and search for Go Fish and find an episode. Go check out Edward's latest catch and cook and stay tuned. Tight lines, everyone.